You're listening to the Lux Life Discovered podcast, where we talk with people who are living a lifestyle that reflects their passion, because we believe everyone should be living their best life, their Lux Life. The show is hosted by Rick Steiner with Steiner Event Group, a premier national event planning company, and co-hosted by Shannon Richmond, the vice president of the Panama City Beach Chamber of Commerce. If you are watching on YouTube, be sure to hit the subscribe button and the bell to get notifications of future episodes. The show is produced by 30A Media and is broadcast on your favorite podcast outlets, as well as YouTube, Roku TV, Amazon Fire TVs, and other major brand smart TVs.
Hello, I'm Rick Steiner with Steiner Event Group. Welcome to Lux Life Discovered. My co-host is Shannon Richmond with the Panama City Beach Chamber of Commerce. So welcome, Shannon.
Thank you, Rick. I always have a great time and look forward to hearing from our next guest.
Well, this guest you're going to really enjoy is Chan Berry, who is a filmmaker, producer, and songwriter.
So wait a minute. He's a what?
Filmmaker. Yeah, oh. You got to get all primed there. So yeah. Chan, welcome to the podcast.
Hey guys, how's everybody doing?
Great. Chan is out in LA. He spends a lot of time. Well, you're all over the country though, actually, aren't you? I know, I was gonna say, we met in Nashville on your documentary you were doing there, and right. But you travel extensively with your work.
Yeah, I do. I have that blessing or curse, whatever right. You want to call it. You know, when you get a particular age, Rick, and you travel a lot, it's not as fun as it used to be when I was in my 20s, 30s, 30s, sure. Or, you know, so, but it's still interesting because of the people that I meet on the road. So, and I love doing what I do in terms of my craft and whatnot. So that keeps me going.
Right. Well, okay. Tell us about your company, the name of your company, and what your focus is within that company.
Well, the name of my company is Urban Winter Entertainment. Here in Los Angeles. And what I do is I'm a director producer, and I mostly do documentaries. And I started off doing music videos many, many, many years ago in the 80s. And from there, I went to do television and film. So right now I'm between documentaries and short films and going into feature films right now.
Okay. So the
at this late
that what down was the last part?
At this late age in the game.
Listen to you. Well, you bring a lot of wisdom to your craft, so that you have to think of it like that.
That was a tactful way.
I know, isn't that true? Yeah.
So what got you interested in doing this kind of career? What brought you to that?
Shannon, good question. It was my Nana growing up in New Jersey, in Newark, New Jersey, and East Orange and Maplewood, New Jersey. Those are the three cities I grew up in. But I was born in Newark, New Jersey, and we lived with my Nana. And I just remember, Shannon, at the earliest, probably 3 or 2 years old, maybe, sitting on my Nana's lap and watching this thing called television, and it's black and white, and watching these movies that she was watching. So stars like Lana Turner, Humphrey Bogart.
Oh, he's my favorite.
Betty Davis, you know, on and on, Montgomery Clift, you know, so Jerry Lewis. So I grew up watching those things, and I got hooked on it. And also at the same time, they tell me I was dancing when I came out. So I love music. And I remember the first record I ever heard that I remember dancing to was Rite Petite by Jackie Wilson. And then there was The Twist by Chubby Checker, and The Twist. So. And then it was Elvis.
So can you still do The Twist?
If I have medication, yes.
I was like, you may have to stand up and give us a little sample there. So
that will not be happening, Rich. You can't get to the paramedics fast enough.
Listen to you. So how did you make the transition to L.A.? Being from New Jersey and
Well, you know what, Rick? I started off in the old days. You started off in radio, and I went from radio to television, from television to film. So I was in radio for about 10 years as a disc jockey in New York, and then I went to Berkeley, California. I moved to Oakland, and my best friend Eric had moved to Oakland. So I moved to Oakland for 10 years, worked in radio and a little bit of television, and then I got a call to come to L.A. to work for Disney Studios as an assistant in development financing for feature films at Disney. So I became an assistant and moved to L.A., worked in the Mouse House. And that's when Michael Eisner was president, right, and Katzenberg was there. So I was under their wing. So I learned a lot about the business and some things I wish I had not learned. And there's some things I was grateful for.
So your transition from East Coast to West Coast, and then you, I'm sure, have seen so much growth in so many different areas and opportunities that have come along that probably when you started out were not available. Is that true?
Yes. Especially for people of color and women, I've seen this thing happen. I've seen doors open for a lot of people of color and women. And it doesn't seem that it was that long ago to me, to be honest with you, Rick. But so many things that good happened. And then there were things that were not so good that happened in the business. People, the entertainment business is a very strange business. And it attracts all kinds of people. And you know, it's always the creative people versus the suits.
Right. It's
always been the creative people versus the suits. The suits are the guys who've never done anything creative in their lives, most of them. But they're about the business and the money,
right,
and the bottom line. And the creative people who really have never done business either, but they're all about the creative, you know, portion of the business. So the two sometimes clash, many times they clash, because one is trying to get the point across and the others. But the thing about it is that we both need each other.
Right. It's finding that mix to make it work. Yeah.
That's what's going on with the writer's strike and the actor's strike here now.
Oh.
You know, we both need each other, but, you know, can we be fair about the game? Because it is a game. Can we be fair about the game?
And it's just not in that industry, it's in so much of life. If you've got the people that sometimes control the finances and then have the investment ability, but not the creative part of it. So it is a kind of a fine line sometime to walk.
Yes, it is. It is. And I've it has messed many minds up in this business creatively, trying to get through the maze, trying to zig and zag through all of this, because I found, as myself, you know, creative people are extremely sensitive and different. That's why we creative people, that we're just a little different. We think a little differently. We see differently. We hear differently from most people. So some of us are a little eccentric, you know, I admit to that. And so we have a different way of processing our craft, our art, our gift. And sometimes when we can't do that, it might lead to other things that could hurt us mentally and physically.
Okay.
That's a good deep. Great. Great way to explain it.
It is, because creative people, they do beat to a different drum, kind of. I guess that's a good expression to use, because you do see things differently, you know, and you have to. If you didn't, you wouldn't be creative, and
that wouldn't be your
come
job.
Up with that unexpected that people will eventually like and be impressed with. Mm-hmm. So,
you know, it really, and the other thing is that people talk about racism in this business, of entertainment. And some of that is true. There's like this sexism in this business, and some of that is true. There's a lot of isms in this business, and some of it is true. But it all depends, Rick and Shannon, on what you're willing to give up, what you're willing to do, and who you're willing to become will dictate your level or rise to fame and fortune, if that's what you're here for,
right?
Fame and fortune. I decided that long ago that wasn't the route that I wanted to take. And I'm not bashing anybody for taking a different road to success and fame and fortune, but my road was a little differently. So there's another price to pay for not falling in line like others.
Right. Has that been I know for you, that's a stand you took and a choice you made. Do you see it as a negative as far as like some of the work you could have gotten or the pay you could have gotten?
Well, you know, there have been many people, Rick, who have come to me over the past, 20 years, 25 years and said, well, Chan, if you just would have just did this and did that, you'd be like some other directors. And when they came to me with that kind of work in the 80s, I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to be known, Rick and Shannon, as a Black director. I wanted to be known as the director who was good, who was talented, who was creative. People, you know what I look like, but that's not all of me. I like the same movies that everybody else likes. I watched movies since I was a baby. So, my favorite movies are like, All About Eve and Braveheart and Star Wars and stuff like that, My Left Foot with Daniel Day-Lewis. So, I didn't want to be pigeonholed into doing street or ghetto films that were a part of the 80s. So I wanted to do other stories about African-Americans and people of color and women, but they were more of dramas and romance. And nobody wanted to listen to me or hire me to do that. So.
All right, then fast forward to where we are now. Aren't you thankful that you took the road you took and made the stand that you made?
Yes, because my soul is easy.
Sure.
My soul is easy, and I'm not led by man. I'm led by God.
Right.
And God has never steered me in the wrong direction. I've paid some prices for the choices that I've made, financially and project-wise, but it has been a struggle. Any independent anything is a struggle, mm-hmm. You're not a part of the mainstream, but I like who I am. I like where I've been and where I'm going because I have faith.
Right. Well, I tell you, I met Chan just a couple of weeks ago in Nashville on set for a documentary that he's doing. I was in the audience.
And,
But Chan was extremely polite to everybody, extremely nice. So
he wasn't one of the ones yelling, telling him what to do.
And he was very open about his faith, about just the way you could just tell it's not an act. It wasn't mm-hmm. there to, it's like you
to
didn't show
you.
Up. Right. You didn't show up to kind of like program us to do what you want us to do. You were very open with everything. And not only him, everybody that was associated with that day, regardless of what their place was on the or role they played in the documentary or on staff with him, super nice. It couldn't have been that was the best set I've ever been on. So thank you for that.
Wait, what documentary? Can we tell yet?
Yes, we can. Okay. We can talk. I've been hired to do here in California a 3-part series on reparations for the African-Americans in California. And it's 30 minutes a piece, 35 minutes a piece per episode. And we just finished this first episode, which is in editing and being edited in New York.
Is that the one you were in?
No, he actually, Rick is a part of the grand opening of the documentary, the opening, the main title opening of the documentary.
Oh. We're the stars. No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm joking. Yeah.
So he was a part of the casting in the runway. It's a runway fashion show of American history.
Uh-huh.
And Rick was a part of that fashion show group of lookies who are watching this fashion show of America.
And those models, they did a phenomenal job, because when they did their part, I mean, it's amazing how serious they were and committed to their roles that they were, you know, portraying. And then when they did the rap, I mean, they were biggest smiles on their faces, and you're like, wait, you're nice, you know, because they were so stern and, uh-huh. and they, so it was kind of, it was nice to see that too. And they were all very, very polite, and you know, just it was good to
that
see.
That says because, a lot about how Chan runs
well,
his operation.
Yeah.
You know, I try to run my sets respectfully. With some dignity, lots of laughs, and music to get people kind of loosen up and get me loosened up. And I like talking and meeting people. I'm not a screamer or a holler. So, you know, I just try to bring my authentic self to my work, and hopefully that, you know, has a positive impact on the people that I'm working with, so I can get from them what I need.
Right. Mm-hmm. So what do you have another project in the works, or that you may not, I don't know if you can talk about what you want to do, but what would be a project that you would love to do that you haven't done yet? Maybe that's a better question.
There are two projects that I want to do.
Oh, he knows them. Okay, yeah. I like that.
There are two projects I want to do. I want to do a remake of All About Eve.
Really? Okay.
The Betty Davis movie.
Uh-huh.
But I would probably change it from Betty Davis being a Broadway actress to that character being a music industry superstar.
Wow. Okay.
So that's one that I'd like to do remake of, All About Eve. The second thing, I would really, 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 really want to do a documentary on the life and music of Stevie Wonder.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Yes.
That's what I'd like to do.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I would like to watch that one.
Yeah, I mean, I just saw Stevie the other night. He was here as a special guest for Quincy Jones's 90th birthday party at the Hollywood Bowl, but it was two nights. So it was a Friday and Saturday night. And Stevie performed both nights with the Hollywood Bowl Orchestra.
Golly.
And along with Quincy's studio guest that he always used in the studio in the 70s and 80s to create Michael Jackson stuff and everything else he was creating. So it was a 90th birthday party at the Hollywood Bowl, and Stevie performed there. It was just it was amazing.
And when you're saying Quincy Jones's 90th birthday, I'm thinking, how can that be? You know, because it's like, you don't, as I get older, it's hard to believe that people that I look at, you know, they're older too. You know, it's like, age gets, you know, when I'm 60, just turned 64. And so it's really relative to where you are in life. I remember when I thought 40, you know, you didn't have anything to look forward to, you were done. You know, and then 40 came and it was like, just getting started.
Yep.
And now I want to tell myself 64 is the new 46, but that's not true. But
because you know we're a few months, you know, from each other in terms of 64. We're not the 64 of our parents, Rick.
Well, you're right. True. Yes, I agree with you there. Yeah,
we're not the 64 of our parents. We're younger. We're much more hipper. We like life a little bit more. We extend ourselves a little bit more, and we're a little bit younger.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, because I remember when I was a freshman in college, I thought my parents were ancient, you know, and I'm the youngest, so they were they were older acting at their age mm-hmm. than I mm-hmm. was at their ages. So,
yeah. And we've got a lot more pressures. Well, I'm not going to say that, a lot more pressures. We've got different pressures.
Yeah.
And kids today have different pressures than what we had.
Sure.
And I wouldn't want to be, you know, 18 or 17 or 16 at this point. I don't want to do that.
I survived it one time. I don't think I would, you know. Well,
you might not do it the
That's
second
true.
Time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The second
time around with these kinds of pressures and things that are coming at young people, I don't want that at all.
So even with your role as a producer and director, how are you seeing like younger people that you're working with? Can you tell a difference a lot of times?
The difference is that they're lazy as hell.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to ask. Yeah.
True
and
story.
Not all, but some of them. They seem to be privileged, and they don't want to do the work that past generations of people have done to get from point A to point B. Mm. They want the McDonald's way right now and instant.
Your way.
You think social media has helped that along?
Social media. But, you know, we as parents have done some damage, too.
Because
I think what has happened, Shannon, is that because we don't want our children to experience the hardships that some of us have had, mm-hmm. we safeguard them against, you know, these things that probably could have helped them
That's
become
so
stronger.
True.
That's a good way to look at mm-hmm. that.
Become stronger in their psyche and their personalities and their decision making. But we were looking out for them with love, of course.
Right.
But sometimes when you do that, you can hinder a person's growth, behavioral, psychological, and spiritual loving growth, because you try to protect them from the world that they need how to maneuver through.
Yep.
That's a good point. That's mm-hmm. yeah. I know I can think of things with my children.
I was thinking the same things.
I've done the same thing. Yep. You know, and my parents did with me because they grew up without anything. So I want to make sure we had plenty of opportunity and mm-hmm. good in some ways, bad in some ways. So, yeah.
I mean, so the thing about all of us, Shannon, is that we just need balance.
Yes. I say work-life balance.
Yeah. We need balance. Mm-hmm. And I think we're getting further and further away from having balance, because look at the world, look at where we are as supposedly civilized people.
Yeah. That brings up a good point too. How do you see your role bringing that balance to other people, like to sometimes even the races, the divisions, bringing that together?
Well, I knew, Rick, what I wanted to do when I was 9 years of age. And I thought everybody knew what they wanted to do. That's how I grew up. You know, I knew what I wanted to do. I know I wanted to be in the entertainment business. But it wasn't until later on in my teens where I know I wanted to focus more on people who looked like me and what the healing process looked like.
Okay.
And so that became my mantra, became my thing of living and doing every day. So I made a commitment to myself and to people that I would do projects that would heal and uplift people of color and women, and then the rest of the world. I wasn't excluding anybody, but I was just trying to pinpoint people I know who look like me, who were, you know, somewhat, and women who were catching hell in this country because of the way they looked, the way they acted, or their gender, you know. So I'm all for change, but I'm all for change when it means that people are being uplifted,
right,
and not taken down because of who they are, what they are, and how they think.
Well,
how people think.
I think that's a great perspective. And, you know, after seeing you in person and being around you that day, it's just, it's refreshing to know the attitude that you have with sincerity in what you're doing. And it you reflect that, not just saying it, you live it. And that's what impressed me so much that day.
Well, thank you, Rick. Thank you. I try to, it's not easy, man. You know, it's not easy. It's not easy being green. as Kermit the Frog
would say. Right,
not easy being green. But, you know, we do our best. If you know who you are and what your purpose is on the planet, it's easier to stay on the path. There's always some obstacles because people will always throw some stuff that's not supposed to be, but it's also trials,
right,
and tribulations. You know, it's all about trials and how faithful you are to the gift that you were given.
And that's a key fact too, because a lot of times when it gets tough, people abandon, even if it's something they really want, they abandon that because it's too hard, you know? So.
Well, you know, it's a lot of things are not easy.
Yeah.
Because if they were easy, you would learn.
That's true. Yeah.
To me, there has to be some. To me, pain is a part of joy. Because you have learned something, you have felt something, and you know that you don't want to do this kind of thing again, so you learned. But in order to have happiness and understand what happiness and freedom is, you've got to have some pain.
It makes you appreciate it more, and yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But pain is a learning situation, just like happiness is.
That's true. Well, I'll tell you what, when you come back on another podcast, I feel like we're peeling an onion and we just got like the first layer. You know, it's can't
Maybe.
Believe it.
No, not even the first layer.
Right, that's true. Yeah,
he's holding back.
30 minutes is already up. But how do people find out more about you? Where can they find information on you?
You know, man, I'm constantly on social media. So I live on Facebook and Instagram. So I always put up things, you know, a couple times a day.
Okay.
About what's going on with my projects and, you know, and music. I post a music list every day about music on my Facebook page.
Okay.
So people can find me there.
All right.
On Facebook.
On Facebook.
Perfect.
And Instagram too. So, okay, well, good. Well, we appreciate you taking the time because I'm very grateful for your time today. So I do thank you for that.
I've had a ball. Thank you. Nice meeting you, Shannon.
Nice meeting you.
And Rick, you know, let's stay in touch, and all the best on the podcast, and, you know, blessings to everybody, and keep the faith.
You too. Absolutely. Thanks so much. And that wraps this episode of Lux Life Discovered, and we will see you next time on our next episode.
Check out Lux Life Discovered on Facebook and Instagram and on 30A.tv. See you next time on Lux Life Discovered.